bhunaktu saha viryam karavavahai tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, so page 9. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continues, therefore, before one's next birth comes, as long as one's body is strong enough, one should quickly adopt the process of atonement according to Shastra. Otherwise, one's time will be lost and the reactions of his sins will increase. As an expert physician diagnoses and treats the disease according to its gravity, one should undergo atonement according to the severity of one's sins. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Before death, quickly one should do this. Otherwise, if there is much delay, one must perform double the atonement, because the condition will be twice as serious. One should do this while the body is without affliction. When the body is diseased, it is impossible to perform atonements. So, in other words, you have performed improper activities while one is healthy and all that. So you still have to do the atonement while you're still healthy. Because once you're sick, you can't do those things. You can't do those kind of austerities. So in other words, you're going to lose from that time when you could be enjoying. Anyway, so if you didn't do it now, you'll do it later. So, right? So it's not that, okay, you do it at a time when it doesn't matter. Yeah. It you still have to be, you know, healthy and sound mind to be able to do these things. So you don't gain anything. Yeah. Yes.
So either in this life or then you have to go to hell and then do it in there.
Yeah. Yes. You know, so it's either you do some yajna and some prayaschitta here that may take you, you know, some days, weeks, months, or years, as opposed to, you know, 100,000 in creamy bojan. You know, so you can see is by that process, atonement is actually well worth it.
Yeah. Because nowadays people think, you know, like in the Jewish tradition, you know, 365, and then one day you do something, and that's the atonement. It's not good enough according to this description.
Yeah, it means it should balance. You know, it should balance. So if it's at least it's a start. So because if it was more than that, maybe they wouldn't do. So at least there's the idea that something goes wrong, you should atone, you should do this. So you could say from that platform, it's good. Mm-hmm. But if they don't do that one day, even though it's so little, they'll be really in trouble. Okay. You know, because it mentions that one has to follow the religion as it is given. You know, so if you accept another religion that's not the Vedic, you make it, but you still have to follow it. So if that is, it's one day a year is Atonement Day, then you have to do that. Otherwise, then yes, then there'll be so much trouble. Yes.
Also, religion, they don't teach the devotional service as recommend atonement.
Sorry?
All religions are recommending atonement.
Basically, because the pure devotional service is not necessarily, yeah, a major thing. It's not that the idea is not a. It's okay. You know, and it would probably be, yes, an ideal, but it's not a standard that's what you should hope for. So it's not that they'll go against it. You know, it's not that you'll go against it, but it's not that it's necessarily that important. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments, the Dharma Shastras, like the Manu Samhita, prescribe that a man who has committed murder should be hanged and his own life sacrificed in atonement. Previously, this system was followed all over the world, but since people are becoming atheists, they are stopping capital punishment. Right? So it's not that, oh, we're becoming more enlightened, more. No, they're becoming more atheistic. Because the point is, if we don't accept God's laws, then we think we do what we like. So therefore, something that's more severe, there's less punishment. Something that's less severe, we give more punishment. We give as we please. This is not wise. Herein it is said that a physician who knows how to diagnose a disease prescribes medicine accordingly. If the disease is very serious, the medicine must be strong. The weight of a murderer's sin is very great, and therefore, according to Manu Samhita, a murderer must be killed. By killing a murderer, the government shows mercy to him, because if a murderer is not killed in this life, he will be killed and forced to suffer many times in future lives. Since people do not know about the next life and the intricate workings of nature, they manufacture their own laws. But they should probably consult the established injunctions of the Shastras and act accordingly. Right? So the atonement is always, you can see, is even though it's severe, it's always less than what will be the reaction. Right?
Yes.
And one could ask, well, why is that? How would that work? How does business work? You put in less than what you get back. So if you're following the proper rules, you put in less, you get profit. But if you're not following the rules, then, you know, for what work you put in, then you get more profit. You understand? More sin.
Yes.
The reactions are greater. So if you're working in the system of piety, you put in some piety, you get more piety. If you're working in sin, you put in some sin, you get more sin. Yes, return with investment. So that's why he's saying here, the murderer, he's killed in this life, he's killed once, then that finishes it. Otherwise, it could go on for many births. Depends on who he killed and what's his situation and everything. But this, the one time it's done. Yes.
So actually, according to Srila Prabhupada, we do have a system, and it's not that difficult to figure it out.
No, no.
But somehow, we're still... You know, some way it's disconnected from the society.
Because we use pranamoya instead of dharma. Because if we use mano and try to understand it, it means you're going to have the problem of, you know, niyamagraha, people not taking something seriously, which is the general, or taking it too seriously.
Yeah.
You know, I remember it's like, mano is something, I forget what it is, but some kind of less illicit sexual activity. That the person cuts off their genitalia and then holding in their hand walks to the northwest until they drop dead. You know, which you won't get very far. You know, so it's like, you know, everybody's satisfied, right? And so one of the kids got involved, I think he kissed a girl or that, and the father was suggesting that. You know, he was so upset, you know, this, that, you know, it wasn't, I guess, part of the father's knowledge that the girl had come and approached the boy. And then he responded, but, you know, which he shouldn't have, but, you know, these kind of things are. So that's the thing, is we take it either too far or not enough, too much or too little. So that's why Krishna conscious, then you can get a proper balance. Because that's the thing, is that for the devotees, only they can actually understand properly mana.
Yes.
And then there's so many aspects of it that actually aren't so important for devotees. But you have to know what that is. The culture remains, but prayaschitta becomes devotional service. Right? Yes. 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 No, no, because they're devotees. All it is that they're dealing more with indirect aspects of devotional service. Instead of direct. That's all. Well, that's because he's going to die, so then he can spend the maximum time absorbed in Krishna consciousness. But he has that ability. Right? How many people do you know that could fast, you know, and not sleep for 7 days and just hear Bhagavatam straight, right? So here's Sukadeva Goswami, Prickett Maharaj, and all the various great personalities of the universe, right? They've all come to here. Right. So they're doing what they do. So in other words, you do what you can. So, Cricket Maharaj Cricket said, one may know, so in other words, those who are not devotees, then this is how it's dealt.
Yes.
And in devotional service, then it's like, then it's not. So then one could see, well, then better to be a devotee.
Yes.
But still, of devotees, then better to be a pure devotee. Like that. So it just naturally moves you forward. Maharaj Cricket said, one may know that sinful activity is injurious for him because he actually sees that a criminal is punished by the government and rebuked by people in general. Because he hears from scriptures and learned scholars, the one is thrown into hellish conditions in the next life for committing sinful acts. Nevertheless, in spite of such knowledge, one is forced to commit sins again and again, even after performing acts of atonement. Therefore, what is the value of such atonement? Sometimes one who is very alert, so as not to commit sinful acts, is victimized by sinful life again. Even though he's very alert and careful, still by habit and this, then again, these things come up. Right? I therefore consider the process of repeated sinning and atoning to be useless. It's like the bathing of an elephant. For an elephant cleanses itself by taking a full bath, but then throws dust over its head and body as soon as it returns to the land. Verses 9 and 10, footnote 3. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns these two verses to Bhagavad Arkamarichi Mala, chapter 13. Sadhana Bhakti executed exclusively by taking shelter of the holy name. Aikantiki Namashraya Sadhana Bhakti, which is in the Abhideya section of the book. Right? So in other words, taking shelter of the name, that's the only prayaschitta. These other things don't really work because on the material platform, even you remove the reaction of the sin, the desire for it remains, so it won't go away. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, it'd be just like this. Let's say a man is hungry. So he goes into an environment that he shouldn't be eating in. You know, let's say there's a wedding reception and all that. While everyone's at the wedding, he's in there eating. Okay? So now, let's say we catch him, you know, we beat him, we find him, and lock him in a room so he cannot eat business. Does it get rid of his hunger? No. So that's the point. Prayaschitta doesn't get rid of the desire for material enjoyment. That's the problem with it. So even though it sounds really good and it makes people happy, it's a crowd pleaser. But it actually doesn't do anything. You know, because people are in the material world, they want things to go nice in the material world. Therefore, if there's prayaschitta, then there'll seemingly be less, you know, irresponsibleness and less bad things going on. But the actual point is that the desires remain, so therefore people are going to do these things again. Yes?
So, why
yes, but then that just makes other people satisfied. It doesn't purify anybody else. It doesn't purify the person. See, why can't you find something? Before, they used to have them sweep the roads. Because the roads have to be swept, and so because it's devotional service, it's actually one of the highest devotional services here in the Dham. Because service of the Dham is done by cleaning the Dham, beautifying the Dham, glorifying, remembering the Dham. So cleaning is one of the main aspects. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he identifies himself as, you know, within the marketplace of the holy name, he's the sweeper.
Yeah.
And he's on the top of the pile. But, you know, we hire karmis to sweep the roads. So then it used to be before is that, you know, okay, devotees sweep the roads, do some extra service. Not that they don't do menial service, clean the bathrooms. I remember sometimes guys that have to clean all the bathrooms in the guest houses for, you know, so much time or this or that. Point is it's that, but it's service. All we do is you can't do service. No, it should be you're doing service, and that people want, then it's there. And if people aren't satisfied, then that, then hey, there's a lot of space on the planet to move to, where you'll be more satisfied by more mundane things. Why come to Mayapur and expect mundane? You know, it's like, you know what I'm saying? Sorry. Does that make sense? Because the point is you have to balance the two. You know, or we also sometimes you have people, they have to sit in the 24-hour kirtan and put in a serious amount of time there. You know, you have to just see, judge what it is, what's the mentality, and then do. But we do one shoe fits all. You know, it's like that, what we were talking about before, that one king. What?
Prakrus.
He has a bed, whatever size he is, so he doesn't have a problem. And if you're bigger than the bed, they cut your limbs off to make you fit. And if you're shorter, they stretch you to make you fit. Point is, you have to fit the bed. So that's not a sign of intelligence. That's not a sign of leadership. Yes, something has to be done. But the point is what is the goal that you're trying to get by this atonement? What's the goal? That's the thing to ask. Because that, okay, we know chanting, this, that. So what is the goal of atonement? What do you actually want to gain? What is the results that you want?
Reform
the person. What will reform them? Only devotional service. So when we say devotional service, that doesn't mean just chanting. Because if that means, if only chanting is devotional service, then their position... in leading this, then they're not doing devotional service. Because only chanting is devotional service. You know what I'm saying? So the point is you do your duties, all the nice things come, all the not nice things come. If you're a manager here, it's just all great and happy, or all day people are calling you on the phone, and this is wrong, and that's wrong, and... You know, you're wrong and everything's wrong and, you know, like that. So, you know, that's you get purified. You understand? So that's the point. You do your duties, you get purified. So the point is that you have to see how they can then have their duties to be purified. This whole point that everybody's got to see, this is real, real village stuff. You know? Which, on if you're not preaching, it's important for villagers. But then you're not preaching because the whole environment's a mundane environment, so it doesn't matter. But if it's a devotional environment, then you're preaching and educating the general devotees so that they can see things from a higher platform. It's not that something's not done. No one's saying nothing's done. That's the point, is we think it's either, you know, drawn and quartered, or, you know, they just nothing. What happened to, you know, just seeing that they're engaged in service? Are they doing enough service? Do they have proper association? These kinds of things. So, okay. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Prickett Maharaj criticizes atonement, saying it is unacceptable in two verses. One sees a king punishing a criminal and hears about the punishments in hell and understands that sin is not beneficial. It is seen that a person commits that same sin again even after doing the atonement. How does atonement destroy sin? If the sin has been destroyed, he will not commit sin again. Yeah, that's how you would know. Also, if they've done atonement, it means no one will ever mention it again because it's been purified. Right? Let's say your shirt gets dirty. Right? People go, wow, that's a dirty shirt. Then you wash the shirt. Now would it be appropriate to go, oh, is that the shirt, you know, now it's nice and clean. Oh, is that the shirt that was dirty before? Aren't you the guy that wore a dirty shirt? Is that culture? Yeah. So, therefore, that's the other problem, is one, atonement in general doesn't purify, but especially the man-made, you know, just speculative ones. They don't do anything because the people don't even accept it that you're purified. All it is they want you to suffer. And if they see you at any time, you know, get back to normal, there's something, no, he has to continue. It's like you eternally have to suffer, and they have to be able to have the satisfaction of seeing that. Right? So you're here, people come, you know, they discuss, you feel remorseful and all that, you know, and so then life goes on. And then on the other side of the planet, people hear about that. Then they come and visit here, then they see you and you're back in station and doing things. Oh, where's the remorse? I don't see any remorse. Yeah, because you're not the one dealing with it. It was dealt with before. But no, everybody's got to see. That's why they used to do things publicly before. Because the common mentality, unless they see it, it didn't happen. You know, it's like Buddhism. If you're not there, when the tree falls in the forest, does it actually make sound? Because I'm the one that makes everything happen. You understand? This is why Parikshit Maharaj, who is a king, who is the emperor of the world, who knows how to chastise people, says, you know, so he's qualified to give punishment. He says it doesn't really do anything. And if he says, who's the man on the planet that can oppose that? But the acharyas are saying it's devotional service that has to be done. Then that means something's done. If you say devotional service is nothing, then why is anybody here? They should pack up and go back home to Tallahassee or wherever they're from. You know? Otherwise, why be here? You know? And if you go back to the West, you don't see the punishment anyway. You know? You don't hear about it. Nothing happens. You know? You have to pick a country where, you know, they make it a little bit more obvious. I think like in Singapore, they'll actually publicly flog you if you do something wrong. So that'd be a good place. China, yeah, means like that. So then, hey, go to those places. Then you'll really see some real serious atonement. Yeah. You know, why come here? You know, why claim to be so liberal in that, but on these things, then they're so, you know, it doesn't make sense. It's so inconsistent. You know, because the point is it has to be there. You know, otherwise the reaction is worse. But the only thing that will actually purify is devotional service. So you have to do devotional service. So in other words, we accept Manu, this is what should be done. But it actually won't fully purify. Therefore, only devotional service will really purify. And since the purpose is to purify, therefore we'll recommend devotional service. So if that means you have to adjust the position or this or that, that's fine also. Because in management, that's what it says. When the king is deciding what ministers do what or what people do what around in the kingdom, then they has to see where their strengths and weaknesses are. So if someone has a weakness of money, you don't put them where money is. You know what I'm saying? If they have a weakness with the senses, you don't put them in those situations. If you have a weakness with power and control, you don't put them there. You understand? So that's all. So you find service. If they have a problem controlling everybody, stick them in a little room with a desk and tons of papers, and then they don't bother anybody. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments, in some religious sects, a sinful man goes to a priest to confess his sinful acts and pay a fine. But then he again commits the same sins and returns to confess them again. This is the practice of a professional sinner. What if you could put that on your resume? Professional sinner.
Many lifetimes.
Many lifetimes. Yeah, yeah. Good at it. Parikshit Maharaj's observations indicate that even 5,000 years ago, it was the practice of criminals to atone for their crimes, but then commit the same crimes again, as if forced to do so. Therefore, owing to this practical experience, Parikshit Maharaj saw that the process of repeatedly sinning and atoning is pointless. What's 9P? Oh, okay, it's not this. This was okay. When Parikshit Maharaj inquired how a human being could free himself from sinful activities, so as not to be forced to go to a hellish planetary system after death. Sukadeva Goswami answered that the process of counteracting sinful life is atonement. In this way, Sukadeva Goswami tested the intelligence of Maharaj Parikshit, who passed the examination by refusing to accept this process as genuine. Right? So that's a real symptom of intelligence, is how to actually purify. So that means devotees, when it came to this, were actually more intelligent before, when they were so-called less qualified. Is that they would just find ways to engage somebody in devotional service, move them to somewhere, give them good association, some way bring them back to that, engage them in service, move them from a situation that creates a trouble for them, but keep them engaged according to his nature. So it meant people moved around. Sometimes they moved to other temples, other yatras, other countries, for whatever, a short period or longer period of time. But, this is what it did. That's what Prabhupada would do. But the point is engaged in a search. That's intelligent. But if you think that some atonement will go, then that means you're less intelligent. But sad part is the people who think that actually think they're more intelligent. And that's the mode of ignorance. Yeah.
Many times leaders also experience difficulties with the general devotees engaging them in the service, because people then say they have that weakness that you mentioned previously, with the money or with the senses or whatever it is, but they like that kind of service, and then they, they say, oh, you take my service away and I'm lost, and how can you do this and that? So it's an intricate situation.
Yeah, but then it has to be explained. That's the whole point. It's quite clean inside. Yes, this is atonement. It looks clean inside, but then they just push all the dirt outside. That was yours, Martin?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So that's the. Is that they have to understand what they are, what's wrong, what's actually the problem. Right? So in other words, if preaching is going on, discussions like these are always going on about devotional service, what is devotional service, what's not, then you can start to understand where the problem is. Then it can be explained. Right? So that's the thing, is if we put the emphasis that management will solve the problems, then how much management can you do, because you're dealing with people. So people will do what they're supposed to do when they're Krishna conscious, when they perform their duties. Like you see that these great kings, and that their kingdoms went so nicely because they were establishing properly how everything worked. Education was going on nicely, people were doing their duties nicely, and so then therefore the kingdom was prosperous. So it was understood what was happening. So if we don't understand, yes, they like that service, but then what about this aspect? So they have to find where they can get that service without this problem. Or they have to do something else until it's not a problem, and then try again. But the point is they take that service away, they give something else, so they're engaged. Otherwise, then, it doesn't work out.
Yeah, because we don't want to offend anybody, but people take offense easily, like, wow.
That's because we've allowed them to take offense. It's the culture that someone can take offense. It's their right to be able to take offense. But what's the actual truth, what's devotional service and all that's not there. So you open the door to the one thing, and you don't, because it's mundane, and they don't understand is that a whole package comes with it. Oh, we're just supporting the person. Okay, but then you've supported in that emotional state at this moment. What are you doing that they can move forward? How are you situating them nicely in Krishna consciousness? That's not dealt with. So the management is just managing politically correct dealings within emotions that are accepted. Because emotions that aren't accepted, there's the same person that's so kind and nice is as hard as nails. I've seen the same person is so soft and so gentle, and other things that are just so dismissive and just so just rough on just, you know, saying something. Because if you base it on something mundane, it's going to be a problem. If you base it on something, you know, standard, authority, then you don't have that problem. You're going to have a problem that people are materially attached, so they're not, but you have to educate. And so only if you can't educate and you've tried all that, then you might have to use some force. But you always start with the softer and then go to the harder. You don't start with the harder because we want to set example and this and that. Because if somebody has to set example, means they're already weak. They've already lost. They already are not in control. And so it's just a latch-ditch attempt to try to be in control. And it'll never work. Right? Because the example is devotional service is what works. And if somebody does something wrong, then because we care about your devotional service, we're going to see that you're engaged nicely in a way that you go on in devotional service. Then people feel secure doing devotional service. Because they know if something does go wrong, hopefully not, that they'll still be in devotional service, but some adjustments will be made to see that they're properly situated. Not that if something goes wrong in devotional service, you're out. So that's that. Then people will be secure. But otherwise, as it is now, what can you do? You can't say anything. You can't do anything because somebody's got a right, and nobody has any obligations, except for you to suffer. That's all. You have to suffer. Everybody else has rights, so that you can suffer.
Yeah. Somehow, this personal and impersonal aspect is always
switching
upside down.
Yes.
So. However you do, you always
lose.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all about the money. Why, you know, this, you know, you have to get degrees, you have to get the money. Then if someone's making money, why is he making money? Where is he getting the money? What's the money being used for? Why is it he's got the money? You know, so that's been the problem since the diaspora, you know, since thousands of years, right? Yeah. You know, so that's not a new one.
It's just sad because we didn't come, like you mentioned, to Maya for this. We came for something else.
Yeah,
but if
we're just coming here because it's cheap here, you know, it costs one-tenth what it costs to live in the West, then that's
it's not even cheap anymore.
It's not even cheap anymore. That's true because we brought the West with us. But before it was literally one-tenth.
Yeah, it was.
It means whatever it costs you to maintain there, you could come and live here. You know, rent was nothing. Some hundreds, 2,000 rupees you could live. You know, and everything. And now it's like, you know, it costs that much to breathe the air. That will be 1,793. And well, even it out, we'll round it up. Huh?
Plus tax.
Plus tax, yes.
Luxury tax.
It's fresh air.
It's holy air.
Yes. Yes. Primary is Krishna consciousness. So the devotees in those earlier days, primary there was about Krishna. And secondary, some were cultured and a lot were not. And their understandings of how culture works and all that was not necessarily very developed. Individuals, it was very well. And others, it wasn't at all. But the primary is very strong. But the problem is, to get the secondary to develop, then they trade that the secondary is the primary. And then the Krishna consciousness is something that goes around that. You know, it's the community, and then there's Krishna consciousness. There's money, and then there's Krishna consciousness. There's skills, and then there's Krishna consciousness. And then the worst part is instead of at least accepting the Vedic Padati to do the secondary, they've dropped that and taken the modern as the second, as the secondary, which is now the primary. So they can't even actually tell what's primary. So then, isn't that Purnamushika Baba? It's like, you know, again become a cockroach. You know. Yes, but that's the fourth stage. The first is it's the books. Purity is the force so you can apply it. But the books are the basis of things. If we use other things as authority, then what's the point? Then of that, education, training, and all that, that's the real point of the book. Because it says, find somebody advanced, learn from them. That's what we're supposed to do. Right? And then we're going to apply whatever situation we're in to Krishna. But we have that knowledge from the books and from the authority how to do that. And then how are we going to be able to do that? Because purity is the force. You drop the purity, then who cares about other things? It's just about pranamoy. Does that make sense? Yeah. You had something there?
Yeah, just thinking when you were saying in terms of all management, therefore need to understand this primary.
Yes.
And be deeply entrenched in that so that they don't regret to find such a
Yes, thing. Yes. But the point is more important than the management is the leadership. Because the leadership has to see to that. That has to be what the preaching is about, the discussions, the association. Then, naturally, the managers will be inspired to work in that way, and then the general devotees will be engaged. But leadership has to do that. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami tested the intelligence of Maharaj Prickett, who passed the examination by refusing to accept this process as genuine, because it won't get you back to Godhead. Now Prickett Maharaj is expecting another answer from his spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami, right, from the 10th purport. Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Vedavyas, answered, "My dear king, since acts meant to neutralize impious actions are also fruitive, they will not release one from the tendency to act fruitively." Right? It means you can't wash blood from your hands with blood. Right? That's just the way it is. So you can't wash fruitive mentality by using fruitive mentality. So that's the whole point. Prayaschitta is karma. It's not jnana. Jnana don't care about this. Jnanis don't care. You do something wrong. Let's say, you know, you have a whole bunch of sannyasis and they're sitting around and being very renounced and studying shastras and very strict sadhana. If somebody falls down, then the point is if they want to continue in that way, they just continue. No one even bothers. There's not a blink. If they don't, then yes, they go back to the world of karma. Right? And in the devotees, it's the same. Do you want to continue devotional service or not? It doesn't matter if you're situated in karma or jnana, as long as it's connected to bhakti. So that's the difference. The karma the only result is karma. Jnana and bhakti aren't solutions if something goes wrong. For the jnani, then karma's not a solution, but bhakti is not a solution. So does that make sense? But for the devotee, it's only bhakti. But you can use the medium of karma or jnana to express it. So actually, it's the only universal principle. So that's the difficulty. When we don't see how it applies, that's because it's more developed. We don't have the finer intelligence to understand it. And that will come by association devotees practicing devotional service. Then it will come. So again, the only solution is association devotees and practicing devotional service. Right. Persons who subject themselves to the rules and regulations of atonement are not at all intelligent. So that means those who subject themselves to it and those who expect them to subject themselves to it, both are unintelligent. Indeed, they are in the mode of darkness. Right? So taking it even a step further here. Because it's ignorance, because you think material has substance and spiritual doesn't. That was the thing. Oh, we're going to get them devotional. Where's the substance? Where's any... You know? Right? The guy is, how you say, we're all sitting there, we're all thirsty. You know, the desert's very big and hot. And there's a mirage there. This person, then he took advantage. There was only one coconut on the tree in that mirage. He took it for himself. He must be punished. How will he be punished? You know, we're going to tie him to the tree, that coconut tree there, and beat him. Someone else says, no, why don't we just actually drink some water? Oh, what is that going to do? That's just drinking water. You know, we're talking about real punishment here, real atonement. You understand? That's the reality. But because we think this is reality, then we'll say, yeah, no, it's right, it's good. Yes. Other devotees too? They don't want it? No, because if someone's reformed, then what do you have to talk about? See, prajalpa requires things that are wrong. Does anybody have prajalpa about how nice it is to chant and how great the kirtan was and the deities look so beautiful and I really like this outfit or I really like those colors or, you know, it's the flower arrangements are so nice. Is that like a prajalpa that can get you... That's another thing. Yes, of course. Yes, I really like the outfit and that color. And yeah, who made the outfit? That she made that outfit? Boy, who does she think? Why is she making outfits? You know, she did this. Like that, yeah. True. Very true. But you can't sustain it. You know, so it's a good opening because we're devotees. If we weren't devotees, we'd just go straight for the juggler name. But, you know, we make it look like we're not doing that. At the go shop. Okay. Because people don't read Prabhupada's books, that's all. And the point is they don't, where's that word? Prabhupada didn't use that word. He's giving, you know, he's reading and then he's doing. Right here, Prabhupada's saying this, Vishwanath's saying this, Sukadeva Goswami's saying this, Parikit Maharaj is saying this. And then they're going to say, where does it say it? Because the point is, unless it says that word, it's like when, okay, Guru Puja. You know, where does it say we have to have Guru Puja? You know, and I pointed out the deity worships here and you have to approach Guru before Guru Bhupi Namaskar and then after saying the paraphernalia when you start the preliminaries of the worship, you worship the Guru 16 items. Like that. No, but it doesn't say that, you know, right here in the temple, right this place, at this, you know, geographic location on a seat this high and that, we're going to, you know, do this and that. There's no verse that says that. Yes, you idiot, it doesn't. You have to be able to understand. They're talking in general. But that's what devotees expect. And if the words that I'm thinking aren't said, then it's not said. Because people don't read Prabhupada's books. That's the one thing Prabhupada said. He says, the only disappointment he has in his disciples, they don't read my books. Everything else, everyone's enthusiastic, doing great things, fabulous things. You know, committed, dedicated, but they don't read, so they don't know. So the point comes down to, the bottom line is this. Here you have somebody who's quite senior saying it, and someone who's junior who's doubting it. So let the junior one say that they... Wait. We're talking Jai Padakamas here. Yeah, yeah. So don't compare the two. You know what I'm saying? What he's done in Mayapur is sacrifices, you know, things like that, his commitment, his trying to help devotees, you know, and engage them in devotional service. There's no comparison. Because the problem is one reads Prabhupada's books and one exclusively doesn't. You want to know something about the latest computer thing and this and that and how to write this and that and what's politically correct, then you ask that second person. They are the acharya. But when it comes to devotional service and what Prabhupada says, they're clueless. I mean, literally. You say something, it says right here. So therefore, that means you're not intelligent if you're into that. And then what will be the response? It will be, well, that's his opinion. Now we could look at it like this. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, read the books. It's right there, straightforward. Does that make sense? So, like that. That makes sense. So on that level, then there's no comparison. When you come for a taste and chanting and kirtan, then you're going to get, that's where you could compare them. But when it comes to the culture, there's no comparison at all. No. Okay. Unless one is freed from the mode of ignorance, trying to counteract one action through another is useless because this will not uproot one's desires. Because you're trying to remove the desires. Here, the Prayaschitti has thought, we're going to, what do you call it? We're going to actually solve the problem by using the mode of ignorance. Right? Someone does something wrong because of ignorance, and we're going to correct it by ignorance. So, basically, that's ignorance. So, uprooting the material desires, we mentioned, you go back to the tathastas point. Which direction the desire goes, that's where it takes you. So if the desire goes away from Krishna, you come to the material world. If it goes towards Krishna, you go to the spirit, then you develop prema. Mm-hmm. So the real problem is desire. So unless you change the desire, you haven't benefited anybody. Neither the individual, neither the community. Maybe the community feel good for right now, and then the next moment something else, they'll never feel good. So you can't make those who are on the mundane platform ever feel good. So, you know, Prickenmar's point is, why even waste your time? Life's too short. Especially for him, yeah. Yeah. But his position's not really any different than us, you know. He's, you know, whether it's seven days or 70 years, it's still, you know, that's like that, what was it, that one sadhu, the very hairy sadhu, sorry, that's Lomasha. Okay, so he has very hairy, you know how some people are really hairy, so he's one of those, like burly, hairy, like burly hands, right, yeah, so really hairy guy, and once in a day of Brahma, I think, one hair falls out. Either that or it's once in a lifetime of Brahma. It's in a long time. One hair falls out. And when all the hairs fall out, he'll die. And so then he's sitting on the bank of the river doing sadhana, no shelter. That someone says, why don't you build a hut? And what's his answer? Life's too short. Yeah. So therefore, it doesn't matter. You know, whether you're Lomasa, Rishi, or you are Pariket Maharaj, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Even though one may superficially seem pious, he will undoubtedly be prone to act impiously. Therefore, real atonement is enlightenment and perfect knowledge. Vedanta, by which one understands the Supreme Absolute Truth. So here is that. Therefore, real atonement is enlightenment and perfect knowledge, Vedanta, by which one understands the absolute truth. So, therefore, studying. So, therefore, it would be more appropriate
you know, punishment that, you know, you have to, you know, study, do the Bhakti Shastri course. If it's really bad, no, you have to do, you know, Bhakti Shastri and Bhakti Bhai Bhav. If it's really, really bad, you have to do, you know. So that's the whole thing. That would be more. See that the sadhana is good. See that the association is proper. That's more of a thing. And then if there needs to be an adjustment of where they're situated in the service, that it's that's too dangerous for them or not, that's another thing. But the point is about if you don't understand, if you're not enlightened in perfect knowledge of Vedanta, then you're not purified at all. Therefore, that's why it says it's ignorance. To think anything other than this, that's ignorance.
Okay, footnote 4. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns this verse to Bhagavat Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 14, entitled Analysis of Unfavorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Pratikula Vichar, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. Additionally, in his Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 127, paragraph 3, Srila Jiva Goswami refers to this verse when he writes, Atonement attained by engagement in devotional service is better than atonement attained by impersonal speculation. Right? So in other words, what is unfavorable conditions is trying to think that we being in the mode of ignorance and thinking that something else is going to solve the problem. So the real point is only Vedanta can solve the problem. That's the... Okay. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. By presenting a conclusion, Sukadev Goswami again tests Pariksit Maharaj, who has passed the test. By atonement, karmana, there cannot be complete, ayantika, destruction of the sin, karma, but quick relief because of the condition of the jiva who is qualified by ignorance. Sin appears repeatedly because of the presence of the seed of sin, ignorance. The chief atonement is jnana, vimarshanam, since jnana removes ignorance. By presenting the opinion of the jnani, Sukadev Goswami again tests Maharaj Pariksit.
Right? So then now it's going to be is that, so then this knowledge will do. But then the whole point is this, but knowledge itself won't. It's only knowledge connected to Krishna, just like activities connected to Krishna will purify. It's the same way knowledge. So karma on its own won't purify, jnana on its own won't purify. Though jnana will purify you of the of karma, to some degree, but not of the desire, material desire.
Srila Sukadev Goswami continues, My dear King, if a distressed, diseased person eats the pure, uncontaminated food prescribed by a physician, he is gradually cured, and the infection of disease can no longer touch him. Similarly, if one follows the regulative principles of knowledge, he gradually progresses towards liberation from material contamination. Footnote 5. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns this verse to Bhagavat Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 13, entitled Sadhana Bhakti, executed exclusively by taking shelter of the holy name. Aikantiki Namashraya Sadhana Bhakti, which is in the Abhideya section. Right? So if you're following the regulative principles of knowledge, but that means transcendental knowledge, right? Of devotional service. That's what's going to go. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada comments. One is gradually purified if one cultivates knowledge, even through mental speculation, and strictly follows the regulative principles enjoined in the Shastras, and explained in the next text. Therefore, the platform of jnana, speculative knowledge, is better than the platform of karma, fruit of action. There is every chance of falling down from the platform of karma to hellish conditions, but on the platform of jnana, one is saved from hellish life, although one is still not completely free from infection. Because one's not involved in activities that can turn sinful. You're just doing sadhana and knowledge, so there's very minimal there that can go wrong. Though you may not attain Krishna, so then eventually you'll come back to karma and then from karma fall down. But it itself is a safer position. The difficulty is that on the platform of jnana, one thinks that he has been liberated and has become Narayana or Bhagavan. This is another phase of ignorance. Right? So it's a different phase, so you don't have to worry about the sinful reactions that send you to hell, but you have bitter problems. You know? Right? Yeah. Srila Sukadev Goswami continues, To concentrate the mind, one must observe a life of celibacy and not fall down. One must undergo the austerity of voluntarily giving up sense enjoyment. One must then control the mind and senses, give charity, be truthful, clean, and non-violent. Follow the regulative principles and regularly chant the holy name of the Lord. Thus, a sober and faithful person who knows the religious principles is temporarily purified of all sins performed with his body, words, and mind. These sins are like the dried leaves of creepers beneath a bamboo tree, which may be burned by fire, although the roots remain to grow again at the first opportunity. Right? So now he's pointed out is that even though the seeming creeper of karma dries up, the roots are still there, so then it can again grow. So jnana will counteract karma, but it won't counteract the desire for karma. So even though it will seemingly get rid of it now, in the long run, it can come back. So, okay. 13 to 14, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura elaborates. Two verses elaborate on this. Tapasa means absence of enjoyment. Brahmacharyena means not associating with women. Footnote 7. Brahmacharya, the life of celibacy, has 8 aspects. One should, 1. Not think of women. 2. Speak about sex life. 3. Dally with women. 4. Look lustfully at women. 5. Talk intimately with women. Or 6. Decide to engage in sexual intercourse. Nor should 1. 7. Endeavor for sex life. Or nor 8. Engage in sex life. Right, so these last ones, they go together. You decide, so therefore you should not endeavor, and you should not engage. Right, so it should go back. So all these other things, thinking, speaking about that. So that doesn't mean like here we're speaking and the Shastra talks about it. It means about talking about it in an inspired way. Right. So. Right. Look lustfully. It means not that you're not interacting, but just you don't. It's not something you can gain. Right. Talk intimately. So then it, because the intimacy gives rise to these others, it has to be, you know, have that element of the proper devotional, yeah. Decide, okay, what was the other one? Dally, right, just to hang out for no reason, right? Means if there's a reason, there's service, then there's that, but if not, this is not, you just hang out just to, okay. One should not even think of women or look at them. To say nothing of talking with them. This is called first-class brahmacharya, 13 to 14 purport. Okay. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura, elaborate. 6. Where was 6? Oh, it's up there. Yeah, enjoyment. Okay. Tapa is explained in the Smriti Shastra as follows. Manas chendriyanam cha aikagriyam paramam tapa, complete control of the mind and senses and the complete concentration on one kind of activity is called tapa. Our Krishna conscious movement is teaching people how to concentrate the mind on devotional service. This is first class tapa. So that's why I said, that's why we say austerity is doing your duty. That means focusing on it, just being absorbed in it. Right? And then penance will come, the difficulty that comes along with performing that duty. So if you focus on Krishna and Krishna consciousness, that's actually the best tapa. That's why it's important to understand definitions. Otherwise, we don't necessarily. Then we misapply. Okay. Samena means by controlling the mind such as much as possible. Dhammena means by controlling the external senses. Tyagena means by charity. Yamena means by non-violence and other restrictions. Niyamena means by japa and other injunctions. Okay. The Taittiriya Upanishad. This may be quoting from there. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continues. Only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. In other words, someone who's not so advanced may be uprooting so many things, but still something's left. And so that's why occasionally something may go wrong. That's why we don't get so bent out of shape. The point is how to put them in a situation of which this won't happen. Right? Then, but as one advances, it comes to the point, it's uprooted, nothing will happen. This is no interest. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. Footnote 8. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns this verse to Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 14, entitled Analysis of Unfavorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Pratikula Vichara, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. Additionally, in his Bhakti Sandarbha, Anucheda 115, paragraphs 29-30, Srila Jiva Goswami writes that both they who have attained perfection in devotional service and they who have not yet attained perfection in devotional service are both eligible to serve the Lord, and is described in the following two verses. After mentioning that this current verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.15, describes those who have already attained perfection in devotional service, Srila Jiva Goswami next quotes a verse which describes those who have not yet attained perfection in devotional service. The lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are sought even by the greatest of demigods, such as Brahma and Shiva, who have all accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their life and soul. A pure devotee of the Lord can never forget those lotus feet in any circumstance. He will not give up his shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord for a single moment. Indeed, not for half a moment, even in exchange for the benediction of ruling and enjoying the opulence of the entire universe. Such a devotee of the Lord is to be considered the best of the Vaishnavas. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.253. Right. So, to not, like that, those would be circumstances that are unfavorable. In other words, he's giving a line of verses, and he's showing what's favorable and unfavorable. So, therefore, not attempting for a pure devotional service, not attempting to go beyond these things. That would be unfavorable. Right? Does that make sense? So devotee, then they always then are always absorbed. Yes. Means what I'm saying is because it's in that section, so it must be in a run of verses where he's pointing out that, you know, unfavorable is not endeavoring for this. So just like you can use something directly or indirectly or in the reverse, you know. Yeah, means it can be used. It's not that it can't be. It may also be in another place where it's also used in a different way. So he, in here is being quoted that here he's used it like that. Yeah. You know, so there'll be other verses that talk about pure devotional service. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. In the example of the fire destroying bamboo, it is possible that the bamboo can grow up again. Thus, even after practicing jnana, sins can reappear. Seeing the dissatisfied king, Parikit, Sugadev Goswami then speaks about the solution according to devotees. Right? Because he mentioned karma, he wasn't satisfied. He mentioned jnana, he's not satisfied. So yes. Now we'll start talking about devotees. Yes.
It's interesting, in the beginning of creation, Brahma, the first thing he saw was karma, then he engaged. Then he saw something wrong, then he meditated, you know. Jnana,
right.
And then still he wasn't happy. And then it took like, you know, millions of years.
Yeah.
And then he came to the conclusion, yes, fine.
That's it, yes. Yeah, so it may take a while.
Yes.
That's the problem. Yes.
You see that not, like, he is quite advanced at the level.
Cricket? Yes. Otherwise, why listen to the conversation? That's why perfect questions, perfect answers. So someone who's qualified, who really wants to know, then they're qualified to ask the question, because they'll ask a question on how to apply it in their service. They're not asking because it's interesting. They're not asking because there's a misgiving. They're asking because they want to know how to apply it in their life, how benefit can be gained. And then someone who then knows what that benefit is, they're speaking.
right? So they'll do their best. So this way, then it becomes perfect. Ah, now I got it. Is that the process is that when you have a specific question, make that question complete in itself so that it gains, you know, the point of being able to apply. Right? Then if there's something else, by that discussion another question comes up, then that's a different thing. It may be a progression. But there has to be the progression that is complete in itself. But we can't start with a general question, and as we're discussing it, then we start bringing out more and more detail that starts changing the perspective of it, right? Because then it just is a discussion. It doesn't really, you can't conclude. And then it also, then the problem is because they're not individual sections, then it makes it look like the further points being made invalidate the previous ones being discussed. So one has to understand is it has to ask it in a complete fashion. Otherwise, then it just keeps going, no, but then this and that and all that. Yes, but, you know, you have to be strict in that. No, but, you know, his mother just died, you know, so we have to be kind. He can't handle the pressure and all that. Okay, so then, you know, then, okay, then we try to give support and all that. No, but he can't cooperate with anybody, so we can't. You understand? That's a waste of time. What does somebody do in this situation? Then you know that. That's because point is, you ask a generic question, it's a generic answer. You want a specific? Yes, specific. Is that really? Yeah. Because otherwise it just goes, and it just turns into. Yeah.
Yes. Sometimes somebody asks the question, and by the way you answer, and they think about it finally, so it brings up more ideas that they do.
That's fine.
So they go a little bit to other directions, because it's, you know, like by association, mm-hmm. they get this other point, and then
yes.
another point.
Yes. No, that's what we're looking for. But we're not. What we're trying to avoid is, I only say this much.
Oh.
And then as soon as that's said, but there's this point. They don't. It's either it's not understood or it's not revealed, and so then it just keeps adding points. They're all like emotional and this and that, and seeming contradictory, and it's like this. Point is, they're different things.
What about emotional questions? Sometimes it's better to give the answer, or it's always good to be emotional.
It depends upon what kind of emotion and what kind of they're doing. You know, if it's about giving some support, and that's there. If it's a matter of, it just depends what the emotion is. Because you know, that's the thing. Everybody wants everything to be emotional, but if you deal emotionally, then that's when they come knocking on your door at 2 in the morning and put a sack over your head and drive you away in a black car. You know, so you know, you're not dealing with human society. Because there's no consistency. There's no human society. There's emotion. There's emotion on this, but no. It can only be emotion how they feel right now. You know, something small you can make into a big. Something big you make into small. Just depending upon your emotion and feeling. There's no rules. That kind of thing's useless. Point is, there's standards the Shastra gives, Prabhupada's giving. We understand that. Then, if there's doubt, then you go on to the next step. So naturally, a progression is good, but we have to make sure that that's what we're bringing out. Okay. Otherwise, if it's an emotional thing, present it. You know, I feel confused, this and that, because I see, you know, different leaders with different opinions. How do I deal with that? That's a practical question. Right? Not that you put your... It's not that you create the situation so you put the other one in the same situation as you, and then you can feel, yes, I'm confused, they're confused now. Now we're all confused together, right? In some sense, we want to avoid that. It's a matter of, okay, I'm like this, how to deal with that? Or, there's this situation, actually, how do we deal with the situation? So if it's a matter of mechanics, then it's a mechanical. If it's a matter of emotion, then like that. You know, I senior devotees came, they discussed, I felt confused, or I felt bad, or I felt this, or I felt that. So then what's the, then you know what you're dealing with. But you know, it shouldn't morph that you're saying something. You start here, and then you end up. It's 180 degrees the other way. That's what you have to. You know, saying that's what was the problem in the class. The question in the class yesterday, in the temple. You start off with one thing, then meaning something totally different. You know, and then the person who then did say that this is what they mean, they had their own motive for it. Instead of saying, no, but I'm doing, shouldn't by doing devotional service, that if everything's auspicious, shouldn't all the difficulties go away? Right? But instead it's, Prabhupada's there and he's a pure devotee, why does he get trouble? It's a material world. No, yeah, okay, but why does he get trouble? You're in the material world. Yes, but why does he get trouble? You know, he's a pure devotee because you're in the material world. No, why does he get trouble? You know, it's like you can't answer it. You know, we're in the toilet. Why does it smell? Because you're in the toilet. No, but why does it smell? You know, it's a toilet. What do you want? You know. Of course, this is the time when the advertising for how you say, poo-pourri comes in, but we won't get into that. Yes.
All right, so why people ask this kind of question?
Because they want to emotionally experience, they need the it gets the bile moving. And if the bile moves, you can digest lunch. It gets for breakfast then, then you can go out and eat all the samosas or something. It's just because there's a need for that kind of thing. Because otherwise, if not, who cares?
Because it's strange, people do it in a public forum, it's kind of awkward.
Because that's for them, that's life, that's communication, that's, in other words, they don't have personal relationships.
And they're basically frustrated in life.
Frustration in life, yeah. If that's the only place, it's one thing if they do that all the time, it just means they're more emotional. You know? But if that's the only place, then because they don't have. In other words, if the only place is on email, on a public forum, that means they don't have a life. Because you can't express things, because as soon as you do, it's a forum, right? So you said something and that, and then somebody responds to that, and then someone else responds to that. The point is whoever pushes send quicker. And then it goes off, and someone takes this, and someone takes that. And then this whole thing goes on, and it finally calms down. Then somebody who hasn't been around for 2 weeks for their own purposes, and then now they decide to go on the forum, then they read the whole thing, but they want to say something about the beginning, so then they open the whole can of worms again, and absolutely useless. Absolutely useless. But it was created to discuss technical points. You know, lunch is at 3:30. Oh, I got a meeting until 3:30, so can we make it at 4? That's what email is for. Yeah, so that's the whole point. But email, it's basically, it doesn't have. If you use it like you would use letters,
yes.
Sit, write, think. You know, but by the spelling mistakes, you can tell that people don't think. They don't go back. They don't reread. Because otherwise, it's there. They type and then they hit send and like that. But letters, you don't write like that. Because you can't sit down, get your pen, and then like this, put it in the envelope, and then now what? Now you gotta, go get a stand, go down the thing, so it's gonna take time. You know, even if you do the thing, you put it in the post, your post box, and the mailman takes your stuff and puts in new, still you have, some time until he comes. So you could run out there and go, oh, that was stupid. You know, but generally you write the first draft and you go back and check, just that everything's right. In doing that, you rethink and that. And if it's really serious, you'll take a little time, a day or two to write it like this. So if devotees dealt like that, then yes, then it would work. But they don't. Yes. Still, but it's still going to create problem. The point is that if you don't know what you want to ask, or you're not revealing what you want to ask, then it's a problem.
Somehow help that person if I can help him.
If they want to, then you can do. But then they would learn, they would become more confident. So it means someone doesn't know, you can help them through it. But then the attitude will be, you won't be saying something and then hear, no, but. If somebody's insecure, they're not quite sure, they don't know how to express it, they don't say, no, but. No, but means, you know, what you said, I don't, you know, that's not, you're not understanding the situation, that's wrong, or by my opinion, but then one is, you never explained it right. You know, in other words, we put out there that there's a game happening, we don't tell you what the rules are, we don't tell you what's right or wrong, and that, and then as you go on that playing field, then they start, oh, this is wrong, that's wrong, that, you know, this is just a game, a power trip, of emotional power trip. And it's very, very popular. The point is you make the rules clear. That's the whole thing. Before it was, that was the way things worked. You know, you knew who was your friend. You knew who was your enemy because they made their intentions clear. You know, you have proposed this new, you know, railroad station here. But I personally feel that that is absolutely not going to benefit the community here. And it should absolutely not be, you know, considered. Then you know they don't like, and so okay, what are your reasons? This, and why are your reasons, and my reasons for why it should be, or this, this. Now we can discuss that. But otherwise, you know, they go all this and that, and you know, don't you think it would be better if we put the money somewhere else? And this, it's not really saying what they want to say. You know, so that's the thing. They could say, I don't think we should do that. I feel that there's other projects more important. Not that it can be done in the future, but that, nor just we shouldn't have. Or, you know, it's more clear. But then people in general were like that. Nowadays, you're clear, then they're happy you're clear because now they have ammunition to use against you. So the only way to survive is to also say things that are not clear so that they can't, there's nothing to grab. And then, you know, because of the modes of nature, someone will bring up something else and the conversation will shift and no one cares anymore. Well, if you said something, that's there, it's eternal. You know, your devotional credits, now those might be temporary, right? But you said something, we have it, it's eternal, right? Now we have you. Yes, engraved in stone. Like that. You know, so these are contemporary problems. Does that make sense? So it's all based on the mood. The mood's right, then it doesn't matter. Somebody's confused, you can help them. But if they think they know everything, oh, no, but, you know, this happened, and that, you say this, but this is there. That's why I always get worried when somebody starts off the sentence, you know, you said, you know, then, okay, where are we going with this one? You know, it might be, you said this, so could you explain further? You said this, but, you know, I think, you know, then, you know, it's like, okay. So, they always have to watch where they're going with the you said. You know, may be good, may not be good. So, okay. Seeing the dissatisfied King Parikit, Sukadeva Goswami then speaks about the solution according to the devotees. Some here indicates that those who surrender. Here indicates that those who surrender the Vasudeva are very rare. So does that mean you come and you bring your deity of Vasudeva and surrender to your Vasudeva? Yeah, okay. We're having, what do you call it? We're having Vasudeva amnesty today. So anyone who wants to bring and surrender their Vasudeva, then okay. Yes. Okay. So where were we? Okay, here one who surrender the Vasudeva, I guess surrender to Vasudeva, yeah, very rare. Kevalaya bhaktya indicates that this bhakti is not only devoid of karma and jnana, devoid of expecting material benefits or liberation, but in no way depends on karma and jnana as secondary elements. So in other words, we saw before what was being used is that they don't want any benefit from karma or jnana. But that's their mode of expression, and that's their identity, let's say as a king or something like that. So therefore, it's required. But here it means they could function on that or not, like Yudhishthir. He can have a kingdom and be engaging everything in the Lord's service, or have nothing and be engaged in the Lord's service. So that's the point. It's not that when we say not dependent upon, that you don't use, you're not dependent upon it. You know, just like, let's say, the cook goes in the kitchen. He's not dependent upon certain things. He can get it done with something else. You know, like you see, I say, somebody wants to make a chance, and they only have a pot for cooking soup, you know, which is a narrow top and very deep, right, and flat bottom, right? So then they'll take it and somehow they'll balance it on the edge on the fire, and then, you know, you can get enough ghee in there, and then you can make the chance, you know, like that. So that means they're not dependent upon now, if they had proper pot, then it would work even easier. But if not, they'd get it done. That's the meaning. But there are those that know they have to have, you know, a cooking experience all about the right pots and the right things and the right ingredients. Now they engage that in Lord's service, that's great. Right? The next is, it's not about their experience, they just want to cook nicely for Krishna. But they, you know, the good things in that work really nicely. They're more comfortable with that. Right? The next level is they're going to cook for Krishna, and they don't care what the situation is. Now, if it's nice, then it makes it easy. But if it's not nice, it doesn't matter. Right? So in other words, for them, it doesn't matter. The Madhyama is preferred, but still, you know, you can go on. But generally, for the neophyte, no, it's required that it's in good form. Right? It's still devotional service, but... You know. Consequently, kartsnyeya, indicates that sin is completely uprooted only by bhakti and by no other process, just as only the sun can destroy the fall. Srila Prabhupada comments, as for atonement, if one has caught even a slight glimpse of devotional service, all needs to undergo prayaschitta atonement are superseded. Therefore, atonement is certainly unnecessary when one has achieved spontaneous love, and above that, attachment with love, which are signs of increasing attachment in kadachitki, devotional service that does not continue incessantly but is sometimes awakened. Okay. Okay, so there was what up, and maybe it's going down now. So it means it's not necessarily steady, but now and again something comes up. Even in the stage of abhasha rupa bhakti, a slight glimpse of devotional service, all the reactions of sinful life are unrooted and vanquished. So he's showing that spontaneous natural love and above that attachment. So spontaneous and natural, that definitely is there. But it even has effect, even if one's engaged in devotional service, and sometimes it's inspired, sometimes it's not, sometimes it's regular, it's sometimes irregular. Or even lower than that, just a slight glimpse of devotional service, it's just some little connection that all the sin is gone. Right? So the sin is gone. The reactions of sin life are uprooted and vanquished. Right? We may have by habit and all that, some things, so that will take time to go away. But the sin itself is gone. Srila Jiva Goswami expresses the opinion that the word kartsnyena means that even if one has a desire to commit sinful actions, the roots of that desire are vanquished merely by abhasha rupa bhakti. Yes?
You're talking about
bija even here? That we're seeing here, it appears the roots of that desire, because roots are the bija. Right. So, in this regard, footnote 9, Srila Jiva Goswami comments that bhakti may be divided into two visions. One, santata, devotional service that continues incessantly with faith and love, and kadachitki, devotional service that does not continue incessantly, but is sometimes awakened. Incessantly flowing devotional service
Interesting. Because in Prabhupada's, then it uses the wording in Jiva's. So it means he's, you see, he's, you know, generally you can see he's quoting from Vishwanath, from Jiva Goswami, from Balmaki. Incessantly flowing devotional service, santata, may also be divided into two categories. One, service performed with slight attachment, and two, spontaneous devotional service. Intermediate devotional service, kadat chit ki, may be divided into three categories. One, raga bhasha mayi, devotional service in which one is almost attached. Two, raga bhasha shunya swarupa bhuta, devotional service in which there is no spontaneous love, but one likes the constitutional position of serving. And three, abhasha rupa, slight glimpse of devotional service. So the one means that there's the how do you say? Slight attachment and then spontaneous, so it's just naturally coming. Right? So there's a slight, so it's on that brink. So that would be considered santata because it's stable, it's steady. Then the unstable, like that, then you have that almost attached. It's almost there, but it's not quite. So therefore, sometimes that comes and goes, so there may not be the stableness. Right, then the next one, there's no spontaneous love, but you like serving. I like doing service. So you're stable in service, but it's not necessarily that it's always just doing for Krishna. You sometimes forget that. So that's the where it's not stable. But the service is always there. And then the others where it's just a slight glimpse. There's a little bit something for Krishna, but, you know, here and again it'll come up. So those are all. So that position, that destroys sin. So that's why the point is being made. Prayaschitta doesn't actually have any point for devotees. Because there's nothing there to remove. It's already gone. The desire, now that's something to remove. But that can only be done by devotional service. So prayaschitta has zero to do with anybody who's connected, even in the slightest way, with devotional service. That's the position. Does that make sense? Srila Sukadeva Goswami continues, "My dear King, if a sinful person engages in the service of a bona fide devotee of the Lord and thus learns how to dedicate his life unto the lotus feet of Krishna, he can be completely purified. One cannot be purified merely by undergoing austerity, penance, brahmacharya, and other methods of atonement I have previously described." Footnote 10. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns this verse to Bhagavad Arkamrithi Mala, chapter 14, entitled Analysis of Unfavorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Pratikula Vichara, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. Right? So in other words, you cannot be purified by austerity, penance, brahmacharya, and other methods. So to think that they are, that's unfavorable to bhakti. So if you have an attachment, austerity, penance, brahmacharya, and other methods are actually going to purify you and actually going to make bhakti more valuable, then that's unfavorable. It has to be that bhakti, no, on its own, is valuable in itself. Yes, you have about 30 seconds. Yes. That's what it said before. That happens. So, but the only solution is more devotional service. Right? If you get hungry, you eat food. But then you get hungry again. What's the solution? More food. Yeah, so don't worry. So devotional service is the only way you can benefit. Anything else is actually the mode of ignorance. And because mode of ignorance is popular these days, therefore it seems like it's something important when it actually is not at all. Sorry? It's overrated, yes. Mode of ignorance is overrated, yes. Yeah. So that's the problem, is prayaschitta and these things. That's the thing, it's unfavorable for bhakti. If you think these things are important, and without doing these, then nothing, then you can't be a devotee and can't be practicing devotional service. That mentality is unfavorable to devotional service. Because then you're taking devotees as ordinary, the process is ordinary. Like that.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi ki